This is Telling Tales with Ms. G here at KTOO 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. And I have a wonderful story by a new author I have just been lucky enough to find out about. It's called This Cat. It's by Karen E. Bender. And I'll be right back. Give you a moment to get settled and be back with Telling Tales with Ms. G here at KTOO 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. This is Ms. G. I'm bringing you Telling Tales here tonight at KTOO 104.3 in Juneau. And tonight's story is by Karen E. Bender, and it's titled This Cat. It was not the cat's fault. He was going to be the newest member of the family. We were at the PetSmart Adoption Carnival to buy a pet. We had that look of determined acquisition. A cloud of cat rescue people came upon us, presenting their candidates. They started with their hopeless cases, the blind cats, the ones that had tested positive for feline leukemia, the one missing an ear from a fight. The children looked upset. They just wanted a nice cat. Nice. We have nice. This one is nice, but it has six toes. And cat herpes. But that just means it has a runny eye. Just give it vitamins. That one, said the children, pointing to the runny-eyed cat. The cat was skilled at being adorable, stretching and yawning with a tiny squeak. That did it. The children were sold. They were 10 and 6. By this time, they had stored up enough love to offer to another being. They mauled him, patting him, making guttural sounds of affection. He was, thank God, tolerant. He stretched again, made that yawn, and I was suddenly, unexpectedly, tearful. We'll take him, I said. He was small enough to fit into the crook of my arm, like a football. I had, in fact, been the one to ask for him, though I blamed it on the children, who liked the fact that there was someone here more powerless than they. They pressed their faces into his black fur, which was so soft it felt as though you were melting into him. We could not agree on a name. Furry, Fluffy, Midnight, Alan, Fred, Licorice. None seemed quite the right name for this animal. We decided that we would name him later. Now he was just the cat. In the morning, the kids went off to school in a big rush. After they had treated us, the parents, like dirt, they were beautiful and holy and problematic. Do you want cereal? No. Can you brush your teeth? No. Stop asking me. Can you make your bed? No. The boy rushed upstairs in a sly, efficient way to root out the Nintendo from where we had hidden it. The girl ate her cereal in slow, elegant mouthfuls as though we were her servants, and school for her would start at 10 a.m. instead of 8. Why did we keep bothering them, and why did we have to rout them out into this glaring, strange thing, the day? When they were finally out of the house, I took the cat into my arms. I felt purring under his thin ribs. His stomach was as soft as a balloon filled with water. He looked at me with tenderness, me, his savior. I was nobody, a customer at PetSmart. There was a familiar fullness in my breath, a sense of heaviness, dropping, a sensation I hadn't felt in 6 years. The cat was looking at me with a pert, intelligent expression. It knew. The fullness got worse. I wasn't sure what to do about it. I lifted my shirt and squeezed the right breath. A droplet came out. I imagined the cat opening its tiny mouth and latching on. His little paws would bat gently against my arms. It seemed a pure impulse, not strange at all. It seemed perfectly natural. I was a little bit proud, as though that droplet revealed some great maternal prowess. It had been 6 years since I had nursed an infant, but I could still do this, even though I was closing in on 45. Frankly, at this point, I was a little desperate for things to be proud of. I wasn't proud of my work, particularly. No one dreamed of my job, being a marketing associate at a luggage manufacturer. I was housed in a box of jealousy of other people's pay, their credit rating, the newness of their cars, the stability of their roofs, and so forth. But perhaps I trumped them all. Perhaps I was getting younger in some miraculous way. I passed this information on to my gynecologist the following week. She grew pale. "What?" she asked. "There was a drop. Was it bloody?" "No." "Was it discolored?" "No." "We have to get this checked out." She scribbled something on a sheet. "Go to Havensworth Radiology tomorrow," she said. "We'll figure it out." The appearance of the droplet, my apparently perverse desire to nurse the cat, led to a battery of painful tests. I went to the radiology center, a giant building full of various X-ray machines. It wasn't a place you wanted to buy a house beside. People gathered in the various sections, knees, lungs, breasts. No one looked happy to be in breasts. The waiting area for the breast region was decorated in muted greens and blues, clearly designed by someone whose assignment was to create an environment where patients could forget they could lose their breasts or die. The technicians' voices were too calm. "Come here, dear. Put your breast on this ledge. We will squish it so it resembles a flattened donut and take a picture. Let me leave the room while the machine floods you with radioactive waves. Thank you. Let's take another." The room flashed with its poisonous light. Driving home, I noticed police cars everywhere. I was suddenly aware of them, floating in their calm and menacing way down the street. I saw the bulky cars, their metal bodies, the officers inside in their buggy sunglasses. There were no apparent crimes in the city, but they were following me. They were. I gripped the wheel, feeling guilty. I wasn't young anymore, yet I had many desires, one of which was my yearning to nurse the cat. What did this mean, besides the fact that the gynecologist wanted to diagnose it? The police cruised by, circling. I got home and resumed normal activities. I always kept an eye on the cat. He pretended he had no part in this and trotted around, arrogant and tiny. I followed him. I waited for the phone. I wanted to hear some good news, but no. There was a call from the school principal who wanted to talk about our son. "Something good?" I asked, hopeful. "Is he doing well in math?" Silence. "Then what?" "There have been accusations," he said.
"Of what?"
"Thievery." Was this a word? "Come in tomorrow." I hung up the phone. The cat coughed and leapt upstairs, 2 stairs at a time. The next stop was the breast surgeon. Those were 2 words I did not want to hear in the same breath. She decorated her office with a poster that said, horrifyingly, "Courage." I did not want to have courage. Who needed it? I wanted shallowness, materialism, sloth. I did not want to be dignified. The surgeon sauntered in. She was young, wearing a ponytail, and looked glossy and trim, as though she had just come from an aerobics class. "A droplet," she said. "Can you show me?" I squeezed. There was another. Now I didn't look at it so fondly. "We just got a kitten," I said. "What type?" she asked. "A very cute one." "I see. Do you have children?" I asked, wanting to bond in that way. "No." She was kneading my breasts as though she were a baker. "Do you have a pet?" I asked. "I have an iguana," she said. What kind of emotion can that elicit? I wondered. An iguana seemed like a cold, silent thing. "I made mistakes raising them," I said. "Oh," she said. "I ignored them when they wanted things. I didn't set limits. They hit each other sometimes with objects. Now there are the dreaded calls from the principal." She had an expression on her face. It could have been admiration, or it could have been concern. "Does your iguana do any tricks?" I asked, trying to be cordial. "We need a biopsy," she said. Now there was fear. It was a cold, sour fear invading my skin. I could not get it out. I opened the car windows, which didn't help. That damn cat. What had it wrought? Why this now? When I got home, I picked it up, gripped its small, thin body. I was afraid to hold him for too long. What would happen next? Where would this embarrassment stop? The cat was following me. I told my husband that night. I didn't tell him about the droplets. It would be a stupid secret between me and the medical personnel. The news would not go over well anyway. He was busy at work. Perhaps he was having an affair. His business would be more understandable if he were having an affair. It would clarify everything. As it was, there was a general gray haze of distraction. He wanted to get away from us. He was in a hurry to get out of the house, to go to the gym, to flee. He wanted at midlife, hey, at early life, as we all do, to be somewhere else. "He's hungry," he said. "Just give him more kibble." We fell into each other with a kind of relief that we could find each other through the blind, sweaty maze that was work, carpools, laundry folding. We were startling, an oasis. The children slept in the other room, moral and forceful as parents. It was important that they not discover us. I locked the door and put a chair against it for good measure. We had invited them into the world with this act, and now we wanted to keep them out. His hands detected nothing. With the deepest gratitude, we held each other down. I didn't tell him the news about the call until we were finished. "The principal called," I said. "There was thieving." "What? Thieving? Of what?" He didn't say. I wanted just to lie there beside him, pretending we had only this to deal with. I rubbed his arm, and it was hard as an apple. It looked no different than it had when we met 15 years before, but its ability for combat would soon reach its limits. "It's nothing," my husband said, reaching and lifting a piece of hair from my forehead with an unwarranted tenderness. "Don't worry about it," he said. "It's nothing." The grim walked to the principal's office. I smiled at other parents in the hallway, as though we had been invited there for another sort of conference. Invited. We all wanted to be invited to hear a beautiful future. We wanted the school principal to know more than we did. He would tell us that our child had been identified as supremely gifted and would be shot through a funnel to glorious success. "Your child is particularly admired by his or her classmates. Your child..." But no. We were there for the other conference. The bright fluorescent bars in the ceiling spat and buzzed. My husband's hand was a knot in mine. We said hello to the principal. He was worn out as a piece of flannel. Our son sat in a chair. He hadn't put on his cleanest shirt this morning. Was that his fault or mine? "Hi," our son said, his eyes traveling the ceiling. He pretended not to know who we were. "Well," said the principal, "I am sorry to say that your son has been thieving. Here's a list. A donut, a pin, $2.25, and the crowning glory, the teacher's turquoise necklace. Wanda Jenkins found it in his desk." I wondered if the principal could run the school effectively if he used this word, thieving. Could this Wanda have slipped it into his desk by accident? I asked. No, she saw it in there. Other kids did too. The principal clasped his hands as though he were trying to hold himself from some other frenzied movement. We all did. We were the epitome of politeness. So, do you understand the seriousness of this? Our son was frozen. His head barely moved. He was this other thing now, a defendant, and he took it like a character in a movie. We all sat there, perched on our chairs in this moment of history. We were barely real. What do you say? Asked the principal. I didn't do it, said our son. But you did, said the principal. We have proof. What did you want? I asked our son. He assumed a blank expression as though he didn't understand the question. I don't know, he said. This was not the right answer, for the principal said, he will be suspended. This goes on his permanent record. You mean we have to take him home? Now? For 2 days. But we have to work. Sorry, you have to figure that out. We'll replace everything, said my husband, even the donut. We shook hands as though sealing some sort of sad business deal. Then we charged out the door, feet ringing down the brown linoleum floor. The echoes were scarily enormous, far too large for the small, paltry humans we were. The drive home was not fun. Silence except for our occasional outbursts. Why? And why the donut? Don't we feed you enough? We got home and sent our son to his room. It was a dumb solution. But what else could we do? He ambled there, shoulders drooping. He was so obedient, I was somewhat touched. My husband and I stood, startled to find ourselves here at midday with our child in the house. You call in sick at work, I told my husband. No, you. He didn't know that he was being insensitive. I want Mom, our son called suddenly. Me? Why me? I just do. So it was me. I called into work. I lied, said I had a sore throat, if only. My supervisor sounded envious. A sore throat? Why did I get to stay home? You can get sick next, I told her, and then felt guilty for saying that. The cat kept following me. He was in a merry mood, as though he sensed an opportunity. Intent on displaying his cuteness, he jumped up and twisted in the air as he batted at a moth. I went into our son's room, closed the door, and sat down next to him. What happened? I asked him. What did you want? I don't know. Did you want to be important? What? He scratched his neck. Did you feel ignored, bullied? No. I could still see the imprint of the infant face in his current one, a mere perplexing shadow. Then why did you do it? I asked. I just had an urge. He smiled. He was suddenly oddly joyful. Mom, guess what? I can do a Heimlich. He leaned forward and hugged me so hard I was breathless. I wrapped my arms around him and didn't want him to let go. He smelled a little rank, like wet sand. It was the smell of future adulthood. Honey, I asked, why are you so happy? I like sitting here with you. The biopsy. The same calm blue colors in the waiting room. It was as though all the doctors had consulted the same color therapist. The magazines were carefully selected to contain no upsetting news of any sort. Golf Illustrated, House Beautiful, sports and interior decorating and cooking appeared to be the only subjects in the world. Other people waiting there wore glazed expressions or chatted happily, pretending they were at a bus stop. I was escorted to the patient room, also blue. These places ate up paint on the cool side of the color spectrum. I was sitting in the patient room when the breast surgeon walked in. Ready? She asked. For what? She prepared her needle. The nurse gently put her hand on my arm. How's your iguana? I asked. I wanted her to tell me something wise. He did the sweetest thing, she said. There was the needle, and there was pain. I was sweating. Easy, said the breast surgeon. She was drawing out something. You're doing great, said the nurse, who seemed to have just taken a class in jolliness. She puffed out her cheeks. She said, take a deep breath. What did the iguana do? I asked between breaths. Oh, his name is Blinky, because he never does. So, I was putting some lettuce in his cage, and he was chewing it and looked up at me and, I think, smiled. The breast surgeon was suddenly eager to share. It was just a reflex, she said. I studied medicine. I know that. But, you know, there was something, I don't know, giving, you know? I know, I said. It just can't help it, she said. You know? Yes, I said. She applied a bandage to my breast. I'll tell you the results tomorrow, she said. Early afternoon, I'll call you. It was like a date, the way she said it. I'll call you. But so much less joyous. I'll be waiting, I said. I came home with my secret bruised breast and let myself step into the muck of self-pity. What the hell was going on? Why me? Why not my friend, my boss, my neighbor? The cat was following me. He coughed a couple of times, a tiny, almost satirical sound, and when I held him, he stopped coughing. His small heartbeat, small, miraculous, against my palm. The next morning, I was waiting. I was waiting when I poured the children their cereal. I was waiting when I kissed my husband goodbye. I was waiting when I watched the children run from the car to their classrooms. I was waiting when I sat down with my coffee at work. I was waiting when I came home to pick up my lunch, which I had forgotten. I wasn't present for anything at all. At lunch, I came home to pick up some papers I had left. I walked into the kitchen and saw the cat lying in the corner. From far away, I thought he was sleeping. However, the cat was not sleeping. He was dead. I knew this fact in a second. My heart went cold with shock at the presence of a dead thing. There was no blood, no vomit, nothing. He was merely curled in the corner, suddenly as lifeless as a teapot or a fork. The cat. I thought it was a prank, but it wasn't a prank. He was, in fact, dead. Dead, dead. I saw him and knew everything. I was weeping before I touched him. He didn't feel like himself. There was that horrible, stark hardness. I called the people at PetSmart. How old was he? Asked the unlucky sales associate who picked up the phone. Maybe 3 months. I got him at the adoption carnival. Are you going to want a refund? He asked wearily. No, I just want to know what happened. You never know about the adoption carnival, said the sales associate. Some of those cats have fatal diseases, you know, and they don't show up until you've paid your $80. How did this happen? I asked. You gave him food, right? Asked the sales associate. Yes. Was there any poison in the house? No. I was crying. The sales associate cleared his throat as though he was about to panic. He coughed a few times, I said. Can't anyone cough these days? We can get you another cat, said the sales associate quickly. We also sell coffins. I made him listen to me cry a little longer. Ma'am, said the associate, now sounding a little irritated, you know, you can get another cat. I want this one, I said. Don't you understand? This cat. I wrapped him in a nice plush Dora towel. Then I moved him to the backyard and sat with him until the children got home. I sat in the yard beside him, the small lump in the Dora towel, for it was somehow important to sit beside him. I was close enough to the house that I could hear the phone. There was that fullness again, now sad and useless. The children came home from school, bickering. How luxurious their arguments were. She stepped on my foot, he ripped my drawing. The arguments were endless, born out of the mere boredom of existence. I gave them popsicles and waited for them to ask. Where's the kitty? Our daughter asked. Something bad happened, I said. They looked at me with their small, perfect faces, always ready for some news. I didn't want to say it, to ruin everything. The cat, I said, he's dead. I watched their faces, curious what they would do. They didn't have a facial expression prepared to deal with this. Their mouths were open, slack with disbelief. What? What? I'm sorry, I said. I showed them the shroud. That's not him. It is, trust me. No, it's not. They wanted, like little scientists, pure and irrefutable proof. Before I could stop them, they went over, and our daughter lifted the towel a little and jumped back. A shriek. I ushered them away from the cat, which was now not the cat. I held them as they sat, absorbing this. But he was fine, my daughter said. We thought so, but apparently not. But he didn't even have a name. I know, but what happened? Something was wrong with him. We don't know. What happened? They asked what happened over and over, as though this question had the power to reverse time. It was a stalwart, beautiful question that did nothing. The children sat beside me, restless, scratching their knees, arms, checking that their own bodies were still there. Then they held each other's hands. We sat in the glaring sun. The sky pressed down on us like lead. It was my job to carve a route out of this. Though maybe not out, maybe that was not possible, but around this. Maybe we could make him a memorial, I suggested. This cheered them up. A memorial? They loved the idea. Let's do it. We would pay tribute to the unnamed cat. We dug a hole in the backyard, dirt flying. They were flushed and chatty and helpful. The children suddenly believed in the Egyptian theory of the afterlife and wanted to throw in anything the cat would find helpful in an alternative existence. The ball he chased, a handful of kibble, an old sweater, a spoonful of tuna, a poem. I'm getting him a blanket so he won't get cold. I'm getting him some cat litter. They rushed back and forth from the yard to the house, collecting items. The yard was green and shadowed and lush. I could almost taste all of it. I wanted to taste the pale, thin light filtering through the leaves and the blue sky above me and the children's golden arms. In the house far away, the phone rang. The children grabbed flowers from bushes and arranged them artfully around the cat's grave. They began to pick up handfuls of dirt and throw them into the hole. Their palms were gray and chalky. The children didn't understand any of it, and they did completely. The phone rang again. The children finished their memorial. They turned to me, hands empty and open. Now they didn't know what to do. They ran to me, their faces aglow with sorrow and triumph at what they had made. Mom, they said. Yes. Now what? Now what? The phone stopped ringing. It was quiet for a few minutes. I sat on the grass. They did too. I sat with them, listening to the low, lost sweetness of our breath. We gazed at the pure, dark light in the yard, and we had but this one moment and the next. Listen, I said. To what? The air. They sat beside me on the grass, and we listened to the air, to the beautiful, peculiar sound of nothing. We could hear anything in it. That was our revenge. We could sit there each moment and listen. Inside, the phone began to ring again. Mom, did you hear that? My son asked. He looked at me, waiting. I did. I was held by the moment. I knew it would lift me to the next one and the next. I let it lift me to my feet. Then I went inside the house to pick up the phone. That was Karen E. Bender's This Cat. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G. I hope you enjoyed that story. Until next time, good night.